Welcome back to A View from the Couch. My name is Rich.
And I'm Jen.
And we're in episode 2 of season 2.
Yes.
Yeah, season 2, tax season. And you might be wondering what this movie has to do with tax season. Not really anything to do with tax season per se, but the main character is a tax attorney.
Tax attorney, yep.
Yeah. So we're talking about The Firm, which is based on a John Grisham book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever read anything by John Grisham?
I maybe back in the day read something, but I couldn't even tell you. Mm-hmm. But I was not on the John Grisham bandwagon. There was a huge blow up of books and movies. When did this come out?
This movie came out in 93.
Yeah, that seems about right. Yeah. I was going to say it seems around mid-90s or so. Like John Grisham was everywhere.
This book came out in 91. I was working at a bookstore at the time, and I remember it was a huge bestseller. Like, everybody was looking for it. Everybody and their uncle. And so then, like, shortly after this book, every John Grisham book for the rest of the time that I worked at that bookstore, which was about 4 years, every John Grisham book would, like, sell out on us.
Mm.
People were just clamoring for this dude.
Yeah. Have you read anything by him?
One book. I read Time to Kill, which is, I want to say it was his second book, but I don't know enough about John Grisham to really know if that's the case or not. That's the one where it is a father in, I want to say, Mississippi or Georgia or something like that, whose daughter is killed by racists, and he gets revenge on them, like he murders them in revenge. Or no, that she gets raped by some racist a-holes.
Was this a movie too?
Yeah.
I feel like I've
it was Sam Jackson, Kiefer Sutherland. I can't remember who else was in it. They had other people in it, obviously, but those are the guys that I remember. And anyway, so he goes on trial for murdering the dude that raped his daughter. And there's like racist people and there are Confederate flags and all this other crap. So I don't know. The 90s seemed rife with like Deep South, like murder mystery type movies, you know?
Yeah.
Just Cause and this one. And then there was another one called Midnight in the Garden of the Good and Evil. Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, not Midnight in the Garden of the Good and Evil. That doesn't make any sense. That just doesn't make any sense at all. I don't know where I get it. Just like my mouth is running too fast for my brain to keep up. So, yeah. So, I mean, it just seemed like that was it. Like the steamy Southern night. We're trying to solve a mystery.
Yeah,
you know, that was like the thing back in the, I don't know why. Like, what was the impetus for that?
No idea.
Me neither. I don't know. I like, that was the thing, right? That was the thing.
It seems to go in cycles like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, you've got those, but it'll go in cycles like you get this run of zombie movies. You get this run of vampire movies. You get this run of, you know, apocalypse movie. It's just, seems to go in cycles like
that. Yeah, genres just are naturally cyclical, and I don't know exactly why that is. It just kind of seems to ebb and flow that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been that way since film started, really.
Yeah. Well, it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah. Right. No, I it just seemed like one of those things, right? Like, that was like the thing at the time.
Now, I've seen a lot of the movies that are based on John Grisham books, but I just don't think I read many of them.
I've seen one. A Time to Kill. And now this one.
I was going to say, now you've seen two.
Yes. This is, I do like a good legal thriller, but, like, it's not really my cup of tea, you know? Like, I don't gravitate towards it right away, you know? I think I come to it later, you know?
Well, I think this movie suffers from the length of this movie. This movie is 2 hours and 34 minutes, and you feel it through this thing. I feel like legal dramas, you're going to have this sometimes where you have lots of slow spots. I'm not sure what all you would cut out of this. I'm sure I could think of some stuff that we would cut out of this, but like 3-4 times through this, I was like watching my clock like, holy crap, we got like an hour and a half left of this thing. Oh my God, we got an hour left of this. It was on and on and on, you know?
Yeah. And I've never seen anything by this director either, which I think is like a cardinal sin. Like, Sidney Pollack is like supposed to be like one of the guys, you know, like a director that like directors look up to, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've just never seen anything that he's done.
Interesting. You
know? Yeah, I went through his filmography, and I think the closest I ever got was Tootsie, the one with Dustin Hoffman. And I think that one, it was, I saw that and I saw part of it and I was like, meh, it was like grown up movie. I don't really care about this. You know, when it came out, it was 82. I was 9 years old. You know, I didn't give a shit about Dustin Hoffman at that point. You know, I mean, whatever. Same thing with Out of Africa. What was I, 12 when that movie came out? That was supposed to be like, oh, this big like romance thing. And it's like, I don't care about that. I'm 12, you know?
Yeah. So I understand. Yep.
Not really my thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I never saw any of his films. Now I can say I've seen one of his films.
Yep.
So
yeah, anyhow. I have.
Yeah. So why don't you give us the cast and crew and let's keep this moving along here since we don't want to be stuck at 2.5 hours for this.
No, definitely not. All right. This was directed by Sidney Pollack. It was written by David Rabe, Robert Towne, and David Raphael. This stars Tom Cruise as Mitch McDear, Gene Triplehorn as Abby McDear, Gene Hackman as Avery Toller. Now, I want to point out a little tidbit I did find on this.
Okay.
Gene Hackman, when he signed on, said he wanted top billing.
Sounds like a very Gene Hackman thing.
Tom Cruise signed on, said, no, I want top billing. So Gene Hackman agreed to let Tom Cruise just to, you know, whatever. Tom Cruise has top billing. Take me out of the billing, off the poster, movie posters, everything. That is why you don't see his name in the beginning. He wanted to be a surprise in the movie.
Ah, okay. Well, he was a surprise. I didn't expect Gene Hackman.
Yeah.
I know next to nothing about this movie before we started it, so.
Okay, I have Hal Holbrook as Oliver Lambert. We have Wilford Brimley in here as William DeVasher. He's like the security guy. Like Wilford Brimley, a security like head of honcho guy. Seems like an odd choice, but okay.
I could see him as the head of security. He's hard to believe as like a hitman, which is basically what he is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ed Harris as Wayne Terrence. Holly Hunter as Tammy.
Yeah. Every time somebody would pop up in this movie, I'd go, wow, everybody and their uncle's in this movie. Literally, everybody is in this movie.
Yep, everybody. David Strathairn as Ray McDear, and Gary Busey in here real quick as Eddie Lomax.
Like, way quick. I did not expect it to be
He's
that
very
quick.
Intense, Gary Busey.
He always is. He always is.
Now, real quick, let's talk about Holly Hunter quick.
Yeah, let's. I love Holly Hunter.
I do, too. She's in this movie, I think, 6 minutes, 5 minutes, five, 6 minutes, something, very short amount of time.
Yeah.
And she actually was nominated for an Oscar for this role.
Yeah, I heard
it's
that.
It's surprising. She didn't win.
She didn't win? Okay.
But she was nominated, and I think it's one of the shortest screen times to be nominated for an Oscar for this.
Who did she lose to? Do you know?
I think it was somebody in The Piano.
Oh, yeah. The Piano was... That would have been Anna Paquin.
Oh, yes. Anna Paquin.
That was the year for Harvey Keitel's, you know, nudity.
Okay. All right.
You've not heard of this? You've not heard of that? No.
No.
Okay. Oddly enough, Holly Hunter is also in The Piano.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have one other thing I want to talk about with Oscars, because I think you'll get a kick out of this.
Okay.
The other category they were nominated for an Oscar was Best Music Original Score.
Okay. All right. I got to talk about this because going through this movie, I was very... I want people to understand that I do think that this is a really good score. I appreciate this score. I don't think it fits this movie at all. Like, at all. As we're watching this, I'm thinking to myself, this is like Randy Newman scoring The Silence of the Lambs. You know, because like in all these like super intense moments, it's like jazz piano. And I'm like, the fuck is happening here? What am I supposed to be taking from this? Is this a parody? What are we doing? What's happening?
I don't know how to feel in this moment.
Yeah. But taken by itself, the score is really good. I like it. I from what I understand, it was almost exclusively on the piano, with the exception of a couple of songs. Like, he did all of this on the piano, including, like, the moments when, like, it sounds like somebody's, like, smacking something. That's, mm-hmm. like, that's piano. Like, he replicated a harp by using the strings of the piano instead of using the keys. Like, he did a lot of stuff, and he did all by himself, which is really cool, and I think that that's a great achievement, but I mm-hmm. really don't think this is the movie for this music.
Yeah, it does seem weird in spots.
It's way, way weird, right?
Yeah.
Like, now just, I want everybody to picture for a moment Randy Newman scoring The Silence of the Lambs. And Randy Newman making songs for the Silence of the Lambs too, right? Like, could you imagine, like, You Got a Friend in Me, but set to, like, you know, Lecter's Gonna Eat Me or something like that? that's the vibe I got with this score. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny that it was nominated for
an
Oscar.
I just had to bring it up. I thought the music in here was good also, but I felt the same way you did. It was like a few times I'm like, this is so bizarre.
Sore thumb, man. Stuck out like a sore thumb. Like, wow, why are, what? This is like a really intense moment in the movie, and like, it's jazz piano.
So much so that me, somebody that doesn't always notice the music in movies, I was thinking this was weird.
Okay, so so I'm not alone here. Good.
No, you are not.
Fair enough. What I understand, I've done a little bit of research on Sidney Pollack and the composer for this movie, and they apparently have worked together a lot over the years, or had worked together a lot over the years. So this is why he's it, why he's a part of this production, but boy, he needed maybe to have spoken up or something and been like, you know what, Sidney, maybe I'm not the right guy for this. Maybe you could use somebody else, or I could collaborate with somebody and we could make this a little darker and give it a little bit more gravitas. But
yeah,
nah, he just did his thing. More power to him.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I am ready to talk about this movie. Are you?
Yes, absolutely. Top law school grad Mitch McDeer, Tom Cruise, the runner, accepts a lucrative offer from the tax law firm Bendini, Lambert, and Locke in Memphis, Tennessee. And he gets wooed by the money, right?
Mm-hmm.
He and his wife, Abby, who is not quite as wooed by him, they end up relocating to Tennessee. And there, Mitch is really dazzled by the firm's generosity in the form of a new house that doesn't have a mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
His school loans paid off. This guy apparently comes from a poor background, so you know, that would be a huge thing, you know.
I
think it'd be a huge thing for anybody.
Yeah, the money's definitely part of it, but there's this feeling of these guys are powerful too. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think that is drawing him into like, this is some place that would be important to be.
Yeah. Now, they also get like a new Mercedes, and the salary is like astronomical.
Yeah.
It's like $93,000.
I laughed when they said that, because I was like, when was this again? That wasn't that long ago, was it?
It was 30 years ago, more than 30 years ago.
Oh, my God. That was that long ago?
Yeah.
Jeez.
$93,000 in 1993 money is pretty goddamn
right,
big.
It is good. Yeah.
It's nothing to sneeze at now either. Don't get me wrong.
Right,
there's a lot of people that could really benefit from
yes,
that.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, the way that they make it seem is that this is like off the charts.
They make it
big.
Seem like a $1 million salary or something, you know.
Which it's not.
No. Although, honestly, you add a $93,000 salary with student loans paid off, no mortgage, no car payment. Now you're talking, that is a lot of money still
in
to this day.
93,
that's a ton.
Yeah.
To this day, that for lots, I would say the majority of people out there, that's still going to be a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. I would take that now in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an easy yes.
Yeah.
No mortgage,
yeah.
No car payment. Fuck yeah, let me
pay
have it.
Pay my student loans.
Take it. Yeah, pay
everything.
My student loans. Jesus. So Mitch prepares for the Tennessee bar exam, tutored by senior partner Avery Toller. Avery gives Mitch the lowdown on the culture at the firm, which is one of kind of loyalty and confidentiality, and of course, high prices, which is interesting because that's going to be the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's going to be it. They have this discussion where he's like, they're paying for this confidentiality. They're paying for our, you know, loyalty to
mm-hmm.
them. You know?
Now, I started getting sketchy vibes
right off the bat.
As soon as he got there. The whole, we're all family thing, and they spend like their weekends together and everything. It's like, this seems a little culty to me, you know? It's like, where are we going to go with this?
Plus, they've got Lex Luthor as his guy that's like fucking, you know, tutoring him. If you're getting tutored by Lex Luthor, something's wrong. You know something's wrong, right? Yeah, I was the same way. I've actually got lots of notes in here I'm suspicious of his employers already, and it's 10 minutes in. Why are they paying him so much money right out of law school?
And he hasn't even passed the bar exam.
He hasn't even
yet.
Passed the bar exam. Yeah, like there's so much that's sketchy about this.
Yeah, and then the wife's comments to Abby also. Is it Abby?
Yeah.
Is that her name? Their comments, too, were really questionable. You know, like babies are encouraged or whatever. And it's like, what? That's so weird. Okay, so as a business owner, and I'm sitting here thinking, okay, if I ever said any of this to my employees, I would hope they'd be like, what the hell is wrong with her? Because that's just so weird. Not cool at all.
Yeah, and in fact, that is what makes Abby kind of start to resent the situation, the fact that like she's not encouraged to go get a job. She's like, you don't have to go get a job. We're not going to stop you, but you don't have to go get a job. You should make babies because babies encourage stability. It's creepy, right?
It's like, so creepy.
Like, and like, way to tip your hand, man. That's like right off the bat, these guys are like evil, like, you know, mastermind fucking, you know, vibe right off the bat, you know?
Yeah, the lady folk need to be at home taking care of the kids, and they don't need to work.
Yeah. So, anyway, Mitch passes the bar exam and works grueling hours, straining his marriage to Abby. But he discovers that the firm's primary job is helping wealthy clients hide money in offshore shell corporations and other tax schemes, which kind of starts to plant the seed of doubt for him. He learns further about a pair of lawyers who died in a horrible accident at the firm's Cayman Islands property.
All sorts of fishy stuff happening here,
right? Like, and the thing that killed me, and of course he voices this later, like in later in the next scene, they go to the Cayman Islands next, and these guys that had died, they died on a scuba diving accident. And the first thing they do when they get to the Caymans, he and Avery, is fucking go scuba diving.
I would check out of that. I'd be like, nope, I'm not doing that. Well, I wouldn't do that anyways.
Didn't two guys just die doing this? I'm not fucking getting in the water. Are you crazy? What are you, nuts? No, I'm not getting in there. But he's doing it. He's in there. He's like all in, right?
Yeah.
Mitch is all in. But he actually does say, don't you feel a little odd doing this right after, you know, two of our people died doing exactly this?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's thinking about it already. Like, you can tell it's kind of processing for him, you know? So while they're there, they meet with one of their clients. And at the meeting, the client mentions how the law firm has Chicago associates that, quote unquote, break legs, which
everybody knows what that means.
Yeah, it's the mafia thing, right? Later that day at the firm's Cayman condominium, Mitch finds a locked closet full of documents that are linked to four of the people at the firm that have died. Like, there have been four lawyers in the last 7 years that have just mysteriously died. And all of their documents are in this Cayman Islands apartment under lock and key. So,
very sus.
Did you just use?
I did.
Wow.
Look at me using modern lingo.
You're hip. Tucka, 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 right?
Do the dance.
Yeah. I'm hip. I'm with it. Yeah.
And that movie's how old?
Yeah, you're hip. You're with it. You got it. Later that night, Avery and Mitch go out to like a bar, and Avery's macking on some woman, and another woman is hitting on Mitch. And Mitch is like, nah, it's not going to happen. He gets up and he leaves, and he goes for a walk on the beach, where he runs across a woman who is being attacked by what he thinks is her boyfriend, but it's not her boyfriend. It's a John. And she ends up seducing Mitch. They end up having a little cake by the ocean, let's say.
Yep.
They bang. So they're on the beach. And now Mitch is even more suspicious of what's going on with the firm and feeling guilty over his infidelity. When he gets home, he goes to visit his brother Ray in prison to get advice, because he knows something is not fucking right here at this point.
I really like his comment about his brother being in jail and him passing the bar exam, and yet they're both surrounded by criminals. I liked that. I thought that was a nice thought there, like, you know, different lives, but yet you're kind of in the same place.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the truth is that it's just a matter of circumstances that mm-hmm. puts you one way or the other, you know?
Right. Right.
Yeah. So Ray refers Mitch to a private investigator named Eddie Lomax, who is his former cellmate, to investigate the associates' deaths, the ones that he found the papers for in the Caymans. So he goes to Lomax, he has this meeting with him, and Lomax in the very next scene gets murdered by two hitmen that show up.
Now let's talk about these hitmen.
Yeah.
We have Jigsaw.
Right.
And we have Hank from Breaking Bad.
Hank Schrader and Jigsaw come to murder Lomax.
So again, more people that are like, hey, that's that guy.
Yeah. Well, as soon as I saw Tobin Bell's name in the credits, I was like, the guy from Saw? What the hell? No idea that this guy had a career before Saw, you know? I'm sure I knew he did. I mean, I'm not an idiot. I knew he was probably doing something before then, but like, you don't see his name all that much, and you certainly don't see his name in something that's not horror adjacent, at least nowadays, you know?
Yeah.
So to see him, you know, what's 10 years removed from Saw, or 10 years prior to Saw, making a movie that is just not in his wheelhouse these days.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of a horror icon now, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
It's just weird. It's a little jarring at first, but eventually, like, you kind of vibe with it, you know?
Well, we were kind of having fun with it through the rest of the movie, whenever they'd come on screens.
So, yeah, he's got that. Like, what he reminds me of is he reminds me of the albino guy in the Lethal Weapon movies. I can't remember which one it is, but there's an albino dude that, like, is like this, like, freaky, like, hitman type character, you know? That's what he reminds me of.
Okay.
And it's right around this time frame, too. I want to say it was, like, Lethal Weapon 2 or 3, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. Because
the first one was Gary Busey as the hitman.
Yeah.
And then after that, there was, I want to say it's the one there with the guy from South Africa. The diplomatic immunity guy, that guy, his hitman was an albino dude.
Okay.
And that's what Tobin Bell's character makes me think of.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's intentional or what, but it's pretty fucking crazy. Like, he's got the same look. He's got the white hair and the weird eyes and shit, you know?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, not that albinos have weird eyes, but this look is he's got weird eyes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Lomax is murdered while his secretary Tammy is under his desk. You can imagine where that was going to go. The story is ludicrous.
Well, she there were a couple, you know. They were together.
No, I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
one of those things.
It is. Wow.
I guess.
It's one of those things.
I guess.
Right.
It's one of those things in the movies that, you know, you've got this private investigator and his secretary, and they always seem to have a thing or something, you know? I mean, it seems to be a movie thing, you know?
Yeah, it's a trope. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But yeah, so she's under the desk. They don't know she's there. So when he gets murdered, like, they take off. But before they actually end up murdering him, he ends up shooting one of them in the leg, the Hank Schrader character in the leg. Do we even get a name for that guy?
I don't remember. Also, he's pretty lucky he didn't shoot
Holly Hunter?
Holly Hunter's character.
Yeah, right.
She's under there.
She was like right next to the gun too.
Yeah.
Like when you look at, there's like one shot where she's framed and you could see where the gun is and it's like right in front of
her
face.
How is she also not deaf at this point?
What?
How is she? Yeah. Stop it. You brat.
Totally worked. Totally worked. Well, that was easy, man. That was fell right into that one.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Good job, honey.
Thank
Good.
You. So FBI agent Wayne Terrence tells Mitch that the firm's top client is the Moralto crime family out of Chicago. It's always the Italians, right?
Always.
And that most of the firm's lawyers are involved in a widespread tax fraud and money laundering scheme. The dead associates were killed because they found out about it and they tried to leave the firm. So they unalived them. Terrence warns Mitch that his house has been bugged, and Mitch agrees to cooperate for $1.5 million and his brother Ray's release from prison. It's no small feat, though, right? Like, I can't. Does this just happen? Like, you're going after, like, a criminal organization, and, like, like, all right, I'll help you, but I want, like, my brother who's been convicted of a felony to get out of prison. You're going to just do that, and I'll help you. Like, that doesn't happen,
I
right?
I don't think so, but I don't know anybody that's been in that situation to know for sure. And I'm guessing it's not something they would advertise. I was a little more surprised, I guess, about the money thing. Like, I mean, do they really pay people like that to, like, okay, I'm only going to help you,
yeah,
government, if you pay me money.
I mean, what else would they do? Just lock them up? They're still in the same position. They have no help.
I don't know. It just seems weird. But, how big of an issue
for them is it to take these guys down? Like, what's it worth to them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, to me, so I think about, like, you know, they've got informants that the FBI, you know, the FBI pays. They pay them a lot of money, too. They don't pay these people a little bit. They pay them a lot of money. So, like,
I
think the money part is less surprising to me than, like, yeah, get my convicted brother out of jail for nothing. Like, no way, right? Like, and they didn't.
They do prisoner release things sometimes.
Yeah, but this isn't like a, like, negotiating with terrorists thing, or, like, you know, an international, like, negotiations, like, oh, you let our spies out and we'll let your spies out kind of a thing. It's just like, we want you to get us some documents and risk your own life and we'll let your brother out.
I have to just be honest. I really don't know. I know nothing about this stuff in real life. It did seem like he's maybe stretching it, but.
Well, I do.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Clearly.
And anyway, no, I, of course, this is all speculation, but. I guess my thought is that it seems a little weird that they would be. It turns out they're not willing to turn him loose.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole big thing that goes on that he ends up getting loose, but, like, they're going to make it look like they're getting him out and then turn on Mitch, basically, once he coughs up the info.
Mm-hmm.
So they do get Ray out of prison, and they transfer half of the money to a Swiss account that Mitch has set up. Mitch starts to suspect that the FBI intends to return Ray to jail. So he coordinates this bait and switch scheme to get his brother out of the country.
Let's talk about the getting the brother out of the country.
Getting Ray out of the country.
Yeah. So I think it was wise for him to get his brother out of jail, because it's very obvious that mafia and the firm, mm-hmm, are able to hire someone and take him out in prison.
Well, not even the mafia and the firm, the FBI isn't going to be honest about it, you know?
Yeah, so they need to get him out. I like how they do the old, like, switcheroo thing and get him out.
Yeah.
You know, like, change his clothes. Right. He walks out right past him.
Yeah.
Gets into a truck. Was it Elvis?
Yeah, it's Holly Hunter's ex-husband. What's her character's name? Tammy. Tammy's ex-husband's name is Elvis, and he's a truck driver.
Mm-hmm.
And she calls him a big teddy bear, and he'd do anything for her. Turns out the thing that he did for her is to help Ray disguise himself and, like you said, walk right out from underneath the FBI's nose,
mm-hmm,
and get into a truck and get him to, like, was it a boat? Is that what it was? Or did they get him on a plane? I don't remember where it was.
I feel like it was a plane first and
then
a boat.
Yeah. Yeah. They get him down to the Caymans, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything else, what's with the Cayman Islands? I don't even know. Like, I don't even think about the Cayman Islands except for, like, this headspace of, like, oh, that's where you hide your money, right?
Yeah.
It's like, that's where you hide your money in the Cayman Islands, right?
Sure.
What else is in the Cayman Islands? What, like, beaches and that's it? Hookers with hearts of gold? What's down there, you know?
I don't know.
I don't either. It made me think about, maybe we should try and go to the Cayman Islands sometime. I just want to see what's down there, you know? I want to see, like, not, okay, anybody that's listening.
Bank account.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah. Anybody that's listening, I'm not going down there. I don't have money to launder to begin with, just so you know. I have not, like, $0 is what I've got, literally. So don't worry about that. But I just want to see it. I want to go down there and be like, you know, you, like, visit, like, movie locations. I want to be like, I want to go visit the Cayman Islands and see all these mystery banks that people, like, you know.
They have people out on the corner selling tickets to see the laundering thing, like, you know, museum. They'll do tours.
See how they launder
They'll
your
do
money.
The tours, you know, like, they tour the...
I remember the
Walking Dead
thing.
Yeah. They toured you around there. The Star Tours. Yeah. Yeah, pay and they'll just do a tour around the area and show you where all the stuff is at.
Here's where we use hookers to blackmail people. Over here, you'll find the cops that are all paid off. Yeah. Anyway, Mitch learns that the firm's security chief, Devasher, that we talked about earlier, he intends to blackmail him with photos of his little one-night stand in the Caymans. So Mitch confesses to Abby to kind of get ahead of it. But she still plans to leave him.
So the whole thing with the setup on the beach
is completely obvious, right?
It is very obvious, but at the same time, how the hell did they know he was going to walk out that way? I mean, do they just put prostitutes everywhere and hope that he tends to walk by one of them at some point? Or
she's the backup plan. I don't have a problem with this. She's the backup plan. The main plan was the woman in the bar.
Yeah.
That was the initial try.
Yeah.
And when she walked out, when he walks out, you see Gene Hackman's character turn and look, and he like glances at the woman as she's walking by, and he knows. So yeah. He must have like signaled to somebody else to get that thing going. Yeah. You know? So
I thought it was the timing seemed a little convenient, but I understand. I mean, yeah. I totally knew that was a setup too.
Yeah.
The other thing that I thought was hilarious was, so Abby takes off running. So she hears this because he turns up the music, right?
Right. Yeah. He whispers it in her ear.
He's whispering it to her. No, this wasn't the part. This was when he was telling her about them being,
about the firm. The mafia connection with the firm.
So she takes off running out of the house. And then for some reason, Tom Cruise's character, he takes off running after her at the fastest speed. It's like, where are you going? You're going to outpace her so quickly. And it's like he's running, being chased by a cougar or something.
He's got to get in front of her to stop her. He can't like tackle her from behind. He's just going to get
but
around in front of her. So that's why
it looked weird. Because she's kind of like jogging a little bit, you know, and he's like fast paced running.
He's like Forrest Gump running through the like, right. Like that's what I was thinking of. Is like, you know, Forrest Gump in the movie when they hand him the football and they're like, run. And he just like runs past all the football players. Yeah. That's her. That's her and him.
Yeah.
Is this the movie that started the whole Tom Cruise runs and everything thing?
I don't know, but we counted three.
Four.
It was four.
Yeah, there's four times.
Four
in this
where he just has to full out off running.
I wasn't thinking about this, but what we should have done is we should have timed the amount and like gotten a percentage of the film that he runs. Like he runs in this film 6% of the time or whatever. You know what I mean?
Now, he did not drive a motorcycle in this one.
He didn't. You are correct.
That is another thing he tends to do in his movies.
That's true. But he does run a lot. And I was wondering if this is the movie that started the running thing, like his whole like Tom Cruise run. So I was trying to think of like the ones before that, like The Outsiders. He doesn't run in that really. I can remember. He doesn't run in Top Gun, does he?
He
rides the motorcycle in Top Gun.
He rides the motorcycle there. I don't remember.
I don't think he runs in Top Gun. And I'm trying to think like The Color of Money. I don't remember seeing that movie. Cocktail. Did he run in Cocktail? I don't know. This feels like the origin of the Tom Cruise running thing.
What did they see him running here and like, ooh, he runs really well. We should have him run more.
This dude runs like John Travolta dances. Let's get this guy in a lot of more running stuff. Yeah. So, anyway. I don't know. I don't know. But he runs a lot.
He does.
In a meeting with one of his clients later, like, that's weird that he just like is still meeting with clients with all this shit going on.
I know, it goes
like
from very intense stuff to we're just having a client meeting.
It's Tuesday and I have a meeting at 10:30. So of course he's got to keep up, the look of it, but still kind of makes it a little bit uneven. You know what I mean? Like makes the pacing a little uneven.
This is where we could maybe take this whole movie and cut out some of this stuff. You know, there's just so much stuff in here.
Yeah. The client, see, so like we're meant to take that Mitch deduces this, but Mitch doesn't deduce this. The client is the one that points it out to him.
Yeah, and then he looks into it.
Yeah, the client
says,
gets no credit for this. Yeah. Yeah, the client gets no credit for this. The way that they position this is that Tom Cruise is like, wait a second, it's mail fraud, but like the dude that he was talking to is like already on that. He's like, yeah, dude, way to catch up. You know, like I don't know. I know he's the main character and everything, but like, why couldn't he have deduced this on his own?
Well, he didn't say it was mail fraud. The client did.
No, they said it at the same time.
At
the same time, and that's the like, oh, I just came to the realization of that. And the client's like, yeah, dummy, I was telling you that. You know, like, I still think that like he could have deduced this on his own. This client interaction didn't need to be there because, number one, it slows down the story.
Yep.
But number two, it makes Tom Cruise look like he didn't figure it out on his own.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't have a problem with that, but like the client should have been the main character that, because like he's the one that figures out the thing, right?
Well, and Mitch,
yeah.
Tom Cruise's character, Mitch.
It's Tom Cruise.
I keep saying Tom Cruise's character. He's supposed to be like the smartest dude out there, you know?
He should be able to
figure this out, you know?
Fifth smartest one out there. And only finished second in the bar exam, so he's not number one.
Yeah.
He's like number two. So.
You know what I mean.
I do. I know what you mean. So. After the meeting with the client, Mitch goes and investigates the firm's billing practices and discovers that they regularly overbill their clients. And many of those clients are in states that are outside of Tennessee, so they're crossing state lines with these things, which makes it a federal offense and makes it mail fraud.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the idea here is you can charge them with RICO in like a RICO case, which is like charge them as a group.
Yeah.
You know? So he enlists the help of Lomax's secretary, Tammy, and they copy the billing records that are in Memphis, but they realize that they need the additional stuff from the Cayman condo. So Mitch goes to Avery to ask, hey, are we going to go to the Caymans this week to meet with the client again? And Avery's like, nope, not you, just me.
Yep.
So that kind of derails that part of it. But then unbeknownst to Mitch, and I don't know how, do we get an explanation of how Abby knows this is what's going on? Or was it Tammy that told Abby about it? And how did Tammy and Abby meet?
Okay, so my issue with this is I feel like Mitch made this plan with mm-hmm. Tammy.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
I feel like Mitch probably told Abby a little bit about what was going on.
After
maybe not 100% of the detail, but, you know, hey, this is what we're going to do, blah, blah, blah. I don't know when, though, because at that time, she's still pissed off at him.
Yeah, that he had just confessed to her, and, like, she's not really talking to him. So when did he detail this plot?
I don't know. But my bigger problem is she just goes and shows up, and Tammy somehow knows who she is and
yes.
trusts her, or Abby trusts Tammy and vice versa.
And why?
These women have never met before.
There's no reason for them to know each other at all. Yeah.
It just seems like a weird, like, all of a sudden we're throwing these people together and we've never seen them on screen yet, and yet they're doing a complicated little spy thing, and they're
yeah.
supposed to trust.
Yeah.
You have to have a lot of trust to do something like that and pull that off,
yeah.
you know?
For all intents and purposes, these two characters don't know the other exists.
Because we never see it on screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think there's a chunk missing here. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was cut for runtime or something, but they didn't cut enough for runtime, like you said.
Right.
This is where it kind of falls apart for me. Is that we have no... They want us to follow this plot in the Caymans for reasons. There's no reason for Abby to go down there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would Abby do that? She says she's doing it for Mitch. Why the fuck would she do that? She's pissed at him. He cheated on her in the Caymans. Why would she do this?
I don't know.
And while she's there, she just magically, like you said, knows to team up with Holly Hunter's character and copy these files?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
And then like she's going to go seduce Avery?
To get the key. Yeah, to get the key so she can get into the condo's locked door, that locked door that's by the thing. They also, there's something else about that, is they never once go back to the fact that Mitch dropped that beer while he was looking into that in the closet that has all those files in it.
Oh, yeah, they never went back to that either.
Right, they drop it. This is where I'm going to go with this, is this movie's kind of sloppy.
Yeah.
You know, like they made that a point to show us that mm-hmm. the beer was still trickling out under the door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, well, the idea, of course, when you put that out there is like, oh, Avery's going to find that.
Right.
He's going to know something's up.
Right.
But he never does. Not on screen.
Right.
And he's never suspicious of Mitch either.
Avery's not.
No. The other people are for other reasons, but not for that reason.
Yeah.
Like, this is a little bit of a sloppy movie, and it's between that and then this idea that the wife Abby and the Lomax's secretary Tammy would even know who they are, like you said, makes no sense.
Yeah, it's not, unless if Mitch was like, all right, Tammy, here is a picture of my wife, Abby, just in case for some weird reason you run into her.
Yeah, yeah.
And then vice versa, you know.
So I want you to go down to the Caymans, and just in case my wife shows up for some reason, maybe like seducing Avery, I don't fucking know. But like, in case she does.
Or even Abby, here's this lady, Tammy, that I'm talking to, not the one I slept with. But a different one. What?
What was the point of sending? How did Tammy end up in the Caymans?
Well, I think that was because Mitch wasn't going. And so they were like, okay, we're going to still do this, but we're going to send Tammy. So while Avery was scuba diving, she was going to go do it. But then they canceled the scuba dive.
Yeah. Okay. So he was going to have her come down with him at the time? Because the scuba diving thing got changed.
Yeah.
Like later, you know.
Yeah,
earlier.
I think Tammy was going to go also, but then when Mitch's character wasn't going, or Mitch was not going,
okay,
then Tammy's like, I'm still going. Okay. I'm going to go do this.
So that makes sense. But the Abby thing makes no fucking sense.
That part is weird. Yeah. I think we're trying to show that Avery really loves Mitch and she's willing to do this for him. Who did I say?
Avery.
Oh, yeah.
Gene
Whatever.
Hackman might love him too, but
he might. He let him off at the end there, but yeah, Abby, you know, that must be what it is they're just trying to show us how much these guys love each other, but why do we need to see all this? I don't understand.
It doesn't make a lot of sense because she is completely betrayed, as anyone should be, by his infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
For her to take this huge risk to go and seduce a lawyer for a mob-connected bank to try and get files that she shouldn't even really know about,
mm-hmm,
to a person that she knows doesn't even know exists.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, Mitch isn't in danger.
Right. Did she have a plan that was other than that?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah. I've not read the book, so I don't know if there's some... I don't know if it ends differently there or what. I have no idea.
Yeah. So... the firm, they catch Abby warning Tammy on a phone tap, and they send DeVasher and his hitmen down to go after them. And then after Abby copies the files, Avery tells her that the firm set up Mitch with that prostitute that was on the beach. Another question for you here. Does that make it all better? He still banged the prostitute.
Yeah.
Does that make it better? No, it doesn't make it better at all. Like... at the end of this movie, Abby's going to be like, look, I found out that she was a setup, so you're off the hook. Basically. It's like, the fuck are you doing? It changed nothing.
Whether it was set up or not, he still chose to do this.
Thank you.
He's still a douchebag.
Right. Like, it doesn't make it better. Like, I don't know what Avery telling her that the sex worker was a setup sting operation. He still fucking did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that, the betrayal is still there.
Yeah.
Anyway. And then he tells Abby she should leave. DeVasher is tipped off about Ray's transfer to FBI custody by a guard that's there. So we know that there's connected guards at the prison as well. And a chase ensues with Mitch being pursued by DeVasher and his hitmen, and he manages to escape them and then goes to meet the Moraltos in person, who have flown into Memphis for a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the wheels kind of fall off for me. Mitch goes to meet with the Moraltos, and he blackmails them.
Oh, stop. Hold on a sec. Yeah. Let's back up. Because before this is where he... takes out
DeVasher and his hitman.
DeVasher and the hitman, right? Yeah. Okay.
That's why he's all sweaty looking.
Yeah.
When he shows up for the mob boss meeting.
So he does this gymnastic move to get up into the thing. So of course that plays back to him doing
the
flips.
Thing you're talking about is the he goes up into the pipes.
Yeah.
Up in this like unfinished office that he's in. They chase him into an unfinished office. He goes and like dangles from the pipes up at the top,
mm-hmm,
and like waits for the hitman to show up to like take his briefcase or something like that.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the hitman picks up the briefcase, Devasher sees the hitman's shadow, thinks that it's Mitch because Mitch had the briefcase the last time, and he just shoots through a door to kill the hitman.
Yeah.
And then when he goes in to investigate, Mitch jumps down and like beats the piss out of Devasher.
Yeah.
With a briefcase. With the briefcase. He beats him with the briefcase.
So apparently Mitch is good at gymnastics too, because we have this whole scene at the beginning of the movie where he's doing backflips down the sidewalk or something
that.
This is all shit I don't care about. I don't. Why are we seeing this crap on the screen? And then, this.
Well, that is set up for why he'd be able to do what he does.
You don't need you. There's so many other ways you could do that and not waste my time. Okay.
Seeing the kid flipping, I thought that was cute.
It was a cute little moment, but. So the kid's out there trying to make some money, and instead of giving the kid money, he does backflips with him, and that's supposed to be okay? He still doesn't give him money.
He gives him a high five. That's almost as good as money. It's a high five from Tom Cruise.
He's making $93,000 a year. I think he can afford some money for the little kid, okay?
Right. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
All right. Anyways, going back, the whole beating the... I can't even remember his name. Devasher. With the suitcase.
Briefcase,
that was so weird. It was like...
What, did he have like a brick in there or something?
Over and over and over and...
Dude succumbed to that really quickly.
Yeah.
If someone was beating me over the head with a briefcase, I don't think I would get knocked out.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is what kind of files are in there? Because he's carrying it around like it's pretty light. I'm assuming some paper files.
Yeah.
Now...
There's a lot of information on those files, though, so it's pretty heavy.
Whatever. I was like, whatever. This whole thing is just dumb.
That didn't make a lot of sense that he'd be able to knock out Devasher.
I did like, though, that the... Oh, what the hell's the other dude's name? The hitman.
Hank Schrader's character.
Yeah. Anyways, the hitman, I did like that he was taken out by Devasher.
That was dumb. Why would Devasher know that was Hank? Or not Hank. Jesus Christ. Why would he
can't get any of these.
I don't know. Straight. Whatever. Why would he know that was Mitch? Why would he assume that was Mitch? This is a dude who's the head of security at a company that is employed by the mob and has to be
absolutely... It's the Quaker Oats dude. He's not a head of security nothing, okay?
He's the diabetes guy.
Diabetes, yes.
Diabetes.
Yeah.
So, but my point here is that character should know better than to just randomly shoot through a fucking door. He could have killed anybody. That could have been anyone.
It could have been a kid.
It could have been a kid. It could have been a grandma with a purse. It could have been anybody, and bro's just firing, just shooting right at.
That is a very good point. You are making a very solid point.
He just is going to shoot at any shadow that looks like Mitch, right? He's like, fuck, that guy's got a briefcase. Oh, shit, a briefcase. Another briefcase. Like, the dude's just going to, anybody that has a briefcase is not safe around this motherfucker, is what I'm saying.
Okay, I just wanted to talk about that real quick, because it was weird. Such a weird sequence.
That's a good choice to go back and talk about that, because it doesn't make any fucking sense.
Okay.
You're right. So at the meeting with the Moraltos, he is going. His plan is to blackmail the mob. Does this ever work out for anyone?
I'm going to say that this is probably not going to work the way he wants it to work.
It never works out for
people.
But this
is
a movie,
you
get a gun to the back
of
the head.
So you're gonna. It's Tom Cruise, so they're going to be like, oh, pretty boy, I guess we'll let you do what you want to do here.
You think Tom Cruise is pretty?
A lot of people think he is.
I'm asking, do you think Tom Cruise is pretty?
No, because all I can see is the crooked teeth thing. I mean,
that's rude. He can't help that.
I know he can't help that. But, you know, I think that he is a good-looking person, but I wouldn't call him, super handsome or, stunning to look at or anything like that. But I think he's a good-looking person still.
Okay. All right, fair enough. So basically he says to the mobsters, as long as I'm alive, all of their illicit activities would remain subject to the attorney-client privilege. And he insinuates that if anything were to happen to him, the copies that he made of all of their files would be released. I'm sorry, this puts a timer on him. Because you think the mob's just going to let that go? Be like, well, I guess we got to let this dude do his thing, right?
Well, yeah, because they're going to think, well, how long is it going to be before he wants the money out of this? Or how long is it going to be before the FBI can crack him or something. Also, I don't know all the rules on attorney-client privilege. And I know it is pretty strict, but yeah. Isn't there some like gimmies in there where they're going to be required to do
no
something?
Idea. No
I don't
idea.
Know that for sure, but
I have no clue.
I'm not an attorney, so I don't know.
Yeah,
but
I'm
it
not
seems
pretend
to me
to know
like
either,
a so. Blank check of never having to disclose anything seems a little unrealistic, but maybe it is. It very well could
know.
Be.
I don't know.
If but, any of you listeners are attorneys, I would love to know.
Yeah. Is attorney-client privilege just blanket? You go in there and be like, yo, I did this.
I stabbed that dude 32 times, and then I turned around and I blew the neighbor's head off, and you can't tell anybody.
Right. Like, it makes me think of in, I think it was Breaking Bad, Saul Goodman's like, give me a dollar. Mm-hmm. And they give him a dollar. He's like, good, now I'm your attorney, and I can't be forced to testify against you, and blah, blah, blah. And that's how he can, like, have his conversations with Walt and Jesse.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think the bigger issue here is that the mob is not just going to sit and take this.
No,
they're in
not.
Chicago. These guys are from Chicago, which means they're probably tied to the Chicago Outfit, which is, like, one of the bigger mob groups in the country. They're not going to roll over and just take this. So it doesn't make any sense that this would even work. But they do. He presents this case to him. He says, look, I want you to help the FBI prosecute the firm by allowing the Moralto's invoices to be used as evidence of the firm's overbilling scheme.
Also, at what point then, if the firm is getting investigated, that somebody there wouldn't turn whistleblower against the mafia?
Like, they are, he's really, like, he's, like, this is, like I said, puts a timer on Mitch's head. This dude is as good as dead. He's as good as dead. What was the point of all this? They're not going to let that go.
No.
Even if they're like, yeah, go ahead, use our stuff, that would put everything that they have at risk. Like you said, somebody's going to turn.
Well, I'm sure the invoices don't say, you know, help Joe Smith get out of, you know, murder charge or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, it's
but
not going
like
to say
said,
that,
though,
but it's going to have information on there that they're going to look into.
But like you said, though, there's somebody at the firm is going to turn. This is not, we already know at least 4 people have tried to leave because of the connection.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There are others.
Yeah.
As soon as something goes sideways for one of these people, they're going to turn state's evidence, and then the mob guys are going to be in trouble. And they know that. Those mob guys aren't dumb. They know that they can't run the risk of this. They never even met Mitch. Why would they trust him?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say, if you don't help me, I'm going to turn all your information out.
Yeah.
Like, at that point, if you're already being investigated because of your ties to a company that launders money, like, all right, look. If your law firm turns out to be laundering money for you and everybody else, right, and mm-hmm. they get investigated for overbilling, mm-hmm. all of their practices are going to be suspect. Yeah?
Yeah.
So all of the things that they do for you will come to light. If they already suspect that you guys are in the mob, as soon as they connect that stuff to you through their invoices, you're done.
Yeah.
You're fucking done.
This is a terrible idea.
This is a terrible idea, and the Moraltos are morons for agreeing to it. But more than that, Mitch is definitely going to die. I think there's no sequel to this movie because Mitch is dead. That's my theory. My theory is Mitch goes back to Boston and gets murdered.
Yeah.
Why the fuck? Okay, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a second. So with his quote-unquote safety guaranteed, Mitch hands over the evidence to the FBI, and then he is visited by Terrence, and Mitch tells him that he did what he did to get his life back. He doesn't know the FBI, he doesn't know the firm, and he doesn't know the mob. But that's not entirely true. That's actually a line of bullshit. The mob will get him. They're going to get fucked by this deal, and they're going to come for him. This guy, he's got university. Remember that movie, that countdown movie where, like, the countdown app, and like when it runs to zero, you die?
Yeah.
That's what he's got on him right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. The FBI he's still concerned for his safety, so he's not, like, completely blind to this idea. So, but he still, We'll get to that. We'll get to that. So the decision to work with the Moraltos angered Terrence and the FBI, but Mitch reminds him that the evidence that he has provided is enough to put the firm's senior members in prison for a long, long time with the RICO Act. Abby, this is the point where Abby comes back and they reconcile. She's like, look, you're off the hook. I know that you didn't really bang her. You banged her under false auspices or whatever, but whatever, which is a fucking dumbass thing. And the McDears return to Boston in their old car, not the Mercedes, which by this point, it's already paid for and it's in their name. Why not take the fucking Mercedes and sell it and then you don't have to worry about it, right? Mm-hmm. But whatever. Meanwhile, Ray and Tammy enjoy their new life in the Caymans with the money that Mitch sent to the Swiss account for Ray. And here's my problem with this. Why would you go back to Boston? Are you stupid?
Yes,
you are setting
is.
Yourself up. You go back to Boston, which is another mob city.
Mm-hmm.
You're a dead man.
Also, I really don't think the FBI would be like, oh, you're going to give us the attorney people instead of the mafia? Okay, cool.
Oh, you got us there, Mitch. Sorry. Well, good job, buddy. Glad your brother got out of prison and you took half of our money. Well, whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that is not how that would work. He's going to end up in jail.
Yeah, he's going to end up dead in jail, too. Yeah, like, he's going to go to jail and they're going to have mob connections and they're going to be like, oh, hey, Stooley.
This seems like to be a really happy ending for just fantasy world. Maybe he died and this is just like, you know, some kind of him envisioning as his death is going
by. This like the incident at Owl Creek Bridge type of a thing where like he's actually dying at the time, but like you're like imagining him like getting out of it. He's like in his addled brain, he's like, that's how I'll do it. I'll do a small blackmail with the mafia, and then he wakes up and he's dead, you know.
Whatever. I don't know. It just seems really weird.
The ending of this movie is really fucking weird, and I can't why was John Grisham so fucking popular if this is what he's turning out? Now I understand this is not him, this is mm-hmm. like some screenwriter adapting his stuff, but this is the framework of this movie, right?
Yeah,
like the book is the framework.
Yeah.
Do we know anything about the book? Do you have any info, any details about, like,
I know the
stuff
ending
change?
Is a little bit different, but it sounds like in the book.
Does Mitch die in the book?
No, but I think he runs with the money is what I read somewhere.
Oh,
so
okay. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Like, runs what? What, like goes to the Caymans or something?
Like, I don't know, him and Ray. I don't know. I think he gets Ray out. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I just know that in the book there's something different where he's maybe on the run a little bit with some of the money, but again, I haven't read it. I didn't want to, after seeing the movie again this time, I didn't really want to read the book, so I didn't research it. So
yeah, all right,
that's my bad.
That's your bad. Why would you want to? Why would you want to read this? If this is your representation of what this guy does, why would you want to read this? You know, I get it. I'm not saying that this is the same thing. A movie and a book are obviously different. The book is the iceberg underneath the water level. I get it. I've seen the meme, but it's still the framework is what I'm saying. And like, I don't remember there being a big hullabaloo from John Grisham saying they messed it up, they screwed everything up. Like, that makes me think that this is pretty fucking close. It hews closely to his original novel then, you know?
Right.
Like,
right.
You would hear, like, people complain if you fucked up your book, if you fucked up their book or they changed it too much, mm-hmm. that people have said, that they go out, Stephen King with The Shining. They will say, you know, what's going on.
But here's the thing. While John Grisham books were very popular, I don't think it's the same popularity as, let's say, Stephen King or some of these other ones where it is a little bit different, you know, there might not be as big of an uproar. I don't know.
Well, but see, when
or maybe I'm just not in that group of John Grisham groupies. Then I just don't. I haven't heard it, so I don't know.
I don't know. But I think at the time that Stephen King was complaining about The Shining, it was 1980. Stephen King's first novel had come out 4 years before. It wasn't like he was like the Stephen King we know now. He was complaining about it in 1980, 4 years after he became like the author, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, his popularity didn't really blow up until the 80s anyway, you know? Like, that's Stephen King's territory is the 80s, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't know. I feel like this seems a little trite. Obviously, they left a lot of stuff out. The book is a lot longer than this movie, but what they gave us was not all that great. Do you have any other additional notes? Anything else you want to talk about?
I have a couple alternate castings.
Oh, I'd love to hear about that. What do you got?
All right. So the woman on the beach that seduces Mitch. How about Halle Berry?
Halle Berry. That would have worked. Yeah.
It was a small part. So yeah, I think just about anybody could do that.
I'm trying to think of when I first became aware of Halle Berry. Yeah. So I mean, around this time, she would have been in things like Jungle Fever, or she did the Flintstones pretty damn close to this too, right? She was
a secretary in that.
Yeah. She played a kid. Didn't she play like... She played like Sharon Stone. The character's name was Sharon Stone, I think, right? Why do I know anything about the Flintstones? I don't know, because I've only seen the movie once, but that sticks with me. Because that was, it was one of those dumbass things.
Right.
The one that I remember from around this period was a movie called Losing Isaiah, which was a movie about, it has Jessica Lange. She adopts Halle Berry's baby, and like it's this whole like... legal drama of the mom wants the kid back, and the adoptive mom's like, you can't take him, and the white savior fucking thing. It was weird movie, but anyway, I don't remember exactly when that came out. I think it was close to this time frame, but my point is Halle Berry was still in the infancy of her career, so I think it would have worked.
All right, for Abby McDear, Robin Wright
seems to get mentioned a lot in the early 90s for roles like this.
Yeah,
right.
Yep.
She could have worked. I mean, like...
Yeah, I think it would have been fine.
I don't know anything really about Jean Triplehorn. Do you know this actress at all?
I know she's been in stuff because she looks familiar, but I couldn't tell you a single thing that she's been in.
Well, looking at her filmography, she was in Basic Instinct. She was in Waterworld. She was in, like, Sliding Doors. Like, a bunch of, like, independent-type movies.
I think I know her face more from... TV shows. Like, she played a character in New Girl, Criminal Minds, Mrs. America TV miniseries that was out. So I think for me, it's more I just recognize her face from some of the different TV shows she's been in.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at the filmography here, and like early on, she was in smaller roles, except for this. And then later she was in like a lot of television. She was in the show Big Love, which is that, I think it was Showtime or HBO show. I think it was that. I don't really recognize her. I don't even know her face. You know what I mean? Like, she seems like she flew under the radar for me for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's possible.
Like, even in stuff that I've seen, I didn't recognize her. I didn't connect it, you know?
Yeah. For Mitch McDear, Charlie Sheen.
Wait. Charlie Tigerblood Sheen?
Yeah.
Really? Would he have done the running?
Maybe.
Would they still
probably
made him
not
run?
To the intensity that Tom Cruise does it.
Tom Cruise is like fucking sprinter, not like just running. This dude's like full on like Willie Mays Hayes sprinting shit. You know?
Yeah. What I'm saying? Yeah. Yep. So. Yep.
Any others?
Nope. That's all I got.
That's it. Okay. All right. Fair enough. Okay. So let's do our thing. Let's do the ratings. And tell me why. Out of 5 stars, where you sit?
Okay, so this is not the worst movie I've ever seen.
Okay.
I'm going to start with that.
Fair.
But it is far from a good movie. I would not call this a good movie.
Okay? Fair.
There's a lot of problems. The biggest problem, it is too long. For what this movie is, this should be hour 45, maybe.
Really?
Yeah. I think... There's too much stuff.
I think we're already missing stuff, though.
Okay, but you really want to sit through this longer? I think you need to tighten up. I feel like we're kind of sprouting out all these different, like, starting path to storylines, but then it kind of sometimes circle back, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
There's stuff in here that I don't think we need. I don't know. I feel like maybe... go through this script, and if you do want it to be 2.5 hours, tell me a better story and make the ending make sense.
Yeah, there's things that you could lose and then put in things that maybe explain stuff in the ending a little better.
Yeah, the ending was just a big problem for me. I agree with what you were saying before. Mitch McDear is not walking away from this,
no.
Whether it be from the mafia or from the FBI. Neither one at this point. He's not walking away from this.
He's safer turning state's evidence for the FBI.
Yes.
Right?
And then going into witness protection.
Yeah, going to witness protection program. Why the fuck not? Right?
Absolutely. There's a an associate, a blonde guy, and his wife that kind of befriend them at the beginning.
I didn't mention them because they don't matter.
They don't, but they're like heavily shown on the screen like the first, what, half hour?
At least.
And then they just completely drop away. Like, yeah. We don't see them again.
Completely inconsequential.
Yeah. What's the point of that?
They were there only to show the effect of, because the blonde guy that was Mitch's coworker was friends with one of the dudes that died in the scuba diving thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife was there to show Abby, or to give Abby a reason not to trust these guys, right?
Okay.
But you could do that other ways.
You could do that other ways, because you could have Gene Hackman's wife actually show up at the beginning. So that way you've got that couple interaction,
mm-hmm.
and that wife could make a comment,
yeah.
and then those two are estranged by the end. It's very, I mean, you could do it a different way without having extra characters in that. I'm all of a sudden at the end going, wait, what happened with that guy?
Yeah, where'd they go?
Yeah, exactly.
Did he know? Was he part of it?
Like, right.
Because the way that he acts, that character, I just want to talk about him for just for a quick second here. I know this is wrap up, but like that character, the way that he acts, like he knows why this dude was killed.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that this wasn't an accident, the way that he's acting.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm fucking stuck. I can't do anything
mm-hmm.
about this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they never touch on it again.
Right.
They just leave it.
Right. Or, you know, another way to end this is, what if Mitch brings in that guy, possibly, and maybe, you know, they can find a few others they can dress. They take this down from the inside or something. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not going to waste too much more time on trying to think of how they could make this better. But the other thing that I thought was goofy, didn't make sense, was the takedown of Wilford Brimley. I mean, what the hell do you have in this briefcase that looks like it has a few papers in it?
He's an old man. He has diabetes. And you just beat the piss out of him with a briefcase. Of course he's going to fall.
He didn't eat his oatmeal that morning,
I
guess.
He didn't have his oatmeal.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyways, I feel like this movie has tons of problems. And then what we talked about at the beginning, the music, while the music was perfectly fine, it was so weird in this movie.
Yeah.
It didn't fit in parts where I felt like we were supposed to be feeling like this dramatic swell, and we're like in this boppy jazz crap, and I'm like, I'm confused.
You just called it good, but then called it crap at the same time.
It is good, but when you start putting it in with, I'm getting confused because I'm getting mixed signals from what I'm trying to watch and listen to.
Yeah.
It's not making sense to me.
Right.
And I'm getting pulled out of the story.
Yeah, it pulls you right out of it. Yeah, absolutely. Yep,
so I have problems with it. So I'm debating between a 1.5 and a 2
Ooh.
At this point.
Ooh.
So I'll maybe, because I think Holly Hunter did great.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Harris.
Yeah.
I think he did great. Gene Hackman, great. I think all of their performances were good. So I will go with a 2
okay.
because I think performances were on. Story sucks.
Yeah.
So there we go. How about you?
You're at a 2. Okay.
I'm at a 2.
I'm also at a 2. And my reasons are very similar to yours. I've already outlined my problems with the ending. I've already outlined my problems with the music. I've already talked about threads that get dropped. You're right, though. The blonde guy and his wife are another thread that gets dropped. I didn't put them in my summary because they're inconsequential to the story as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they in here?
Right.
They just clog stuff up. You take that out. You tighten this up. You can tell us why Abby and Tammy know each other at the end. You give us that. We need that. That's essential to the story. And the characters at the beginning are not essential to the story because, like you said, have it be Hackman and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Have the death of the guy that's their friend be the dividing line for them. That's why the wife is estranged by the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
That you could have that. It would work. But it doesn't work like they've got it, as they've got it here. I'm completely mystified as to how John Grisham is considered like a great capital G writer if this is what he was putting out. I mean, this is like, it's a pop boiler, but it's a pop boiler that doesn't like sew together properly.
Yeah.
You know? Like all the stuff in this movie that should make sense makes absolutely no sense. Like the things that you need to have put together by the end of the movie just feel like they're thrown into a box at the end of the movie and they're like, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
This is it. Mm-hmm. Enjoy.
Yeah.
Which I didn't. So I'm at a 2. I teetered on a 1-star rating for a while. I'm at a 2 because of, like you, the performances. The performances are stellar in some cases. Holly Hunter, Gene Hackman, even Tom Cruise's performance is really fucking good in this. Mm-hmm. Jean Triplehorn's character, her work is really good in this. And I don't even know her. I've never seen her in anything else that I can remember. That's what this person is to me. Like, I don't recognize her. I don't put her in like a movie and just say, oh, that's Jean Triplehorn, right?
Right.
But she did a really good job here.
Yeah.
Everybody did fantastic in this movie, but the problem is the movie just runs right off a cliff, if I can just tie it to the whole Tom Cruise running thing. Mm-hmm. It runs off a cliff. It makes no sense. Why Mitch, who is supposed to be this super smart guy, thinks for any reason that the mob is going to just leave him alone after this,
yeah,
is beyond me.
Right.
So much so that he decides to go back to Boston instead of running and staying on the run.
Right.
If you're smart, you split the money with your brother and you go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Even if you've reconnected with your wife, you take her and you go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Stay the fuck out of Boston. They know where you are. They know where you're from. They know all of this.
Yes.
Doesn't make any sense. So 2 stars, and they're lucky to get that. So there we have it. All right. So next week, though, we are doing The Shawshank Redemption, yes?
Yes.
Okay. So that will be episode 3 in our tax season, season 2. And we'll see you here, right here on the couch next week to get busy living or get busy dying. Thanks for listening, everyone.
You have been listening to A View from the Couch. Visit our new website, thecouchpod.com, where you will find a calendar of upcoming releases, links to our podcast episodes, and you can sign up for our upcoming newsletter. You can also email our host directly at view@thecouchpod.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice. Every review helps us get noticed. Thanks for listening.